Pinkerton of the Arlington Catholic Herald. We're here with our annual Oscars Edition podcast. With us today, our daughter of St. Paul, Sister Rose Picotti, who reviews movies and teaches media literacy. She is joining us from Rome, where it's about 8 o'clock in the evening, I believe. And also John Mulderig, the media reviewer for OSV News, and he is joining us from Eastern Time, same as us, in New York. My special co-host this week is Chris Gunty, associate publisher of Catholic Review Media in the Archdiocese of Baltimore and host of Catholic Review Radio, and he's also my husband. Welcome to the show, everyone. Before we dig into the Best Picture nominees, let's talk a little bit about some of the trends that we saw in the movies in 2025. What were the good and the bad trends in Hollywood? Sister, did you want to kick us off?
Well, overall, you know, I'm here in Rome, so I'm seeing fewer films than I would like. But I would say if I compare this year's batch of films to last year's, I'm seeing more films about ordinary people, which I really loved, especially in Song Sung Blue and even in F1, which I thoroughly enjoyed. But there's also some sinners with such a different mind-blowing combination of different genres but with great political, something to say politically. And maybe that's true even of The Secret Agent, which is the Brazilian nominee. So I don't know if there's any great themes that I can acknowledge. Maybe John would be better at this.
Well, I wouldn't really say I could pick up a single theme. One thing that, if it's not too mundane, just the volume of releases. I think this in recent months we've had the first time that we've had the volume of releases from before the pandemic. So I was noticing, for instance, one week there were three wide releases, which hasn't really happened since the pandemic, I don't think. So Hollywood's output seems to be back after both the pandemic and the strikes. So it's coming out at full force. I think one thing I notice in the nominations is a continued interest in offbeat productions. You know, some of the storylines are unusual, to say the least, but it's an interesting combination. I don't know about Sister. I was a little surprised by the 16 nominations, was it, for Sinners? Record-breaking?
A little bit, yeah.
More than it deserved, I thought.
Yeah.
So, yeah. John, you did a top 10 movies of 2025 for OSV News. None of those were nominated for Best Picture. Why didn't movies such as these get more love from the Academy nominators?
Well, there again, I think they're anxious for offbeat things, but also things that register with a Hollywood mindset, I would think, politically or culturally. And that isn't necessarily the criterion from which we would assess films. So we're looking for spiritual and moral values, as well as aesthetic quality. And I think Hollywood is coming from a different angle, essentially.
Mm-hmm. We noticed that a lot of the movies last year ran for more than 2.5 hours, including half of the Best Picture nominees. Why are these movies so long? And do people enjoy them that long?
No, I don't enjoy them that long. And I think that people don't know how to kill their darlings, which is that famous saying about editing out.
Yeah.
You know, and if the directors or the producers are too involved in the editing process, then I think that's what happens, is that they don't know how to remove what they love. And I can understand that as a writer, but I find it terribly annoying as an audience member. 2 hours is about as much as I can take.
Yeah. There's a band that Ann and I enjoy called Darling Side, and they name themselves that just for the whole idea of killing your darlings. You know, so, yeah. John, what's your take on it?
Well, another thing I think might be going on is as the price of a movie ticket continues to go up, somehow the movie makers feel that they need to give you more. And maybe that's the expanding the running time is the easiest way to do it. But I agree with Sister that human nature being what it is, 2 hours is about the proper limit, unless you're making an incredibly high quality screen version of War and Peace, which might justify 2.5 hours. But short of that, I don't see the justification for it.
Nicholas Nickleby on film, you know, that needs more than 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
Well, it must be the editor in me, but there were several that I thought, oh, if you could just take out that 20-minute section and then bring up the ending. But also, we have to consider 2 hours, 2.5 hours in a theater is a little bit different than 2 hours, 2.5 hours at home when you can hit pause, go get a snack, and come back. So it's it was interesting. We did see all 10 of them and most of them at home. I think a couple in the theater. All right, let's go over the nominees for Best Picture then in alphabetical order. Begonia, F1, Frankenstein, Hamnet, Marty Supreme, One Battle After Another, The Secret Agent, Sentimental Value, Sinner, and Train Dreams. So what makes this group of nominees distinctive? I mean, we've got a vampire movie in there, a monster movie, an alien conspiracy, and a couple of foreign language films. So, sister, what are you thinking of the collective this year?
Well, you know, like John was saying, it's interesting. It's almost like Hollywood has to do something different. And in a way they do. Otherwise, they're just telling the same story over and over. On the other hand, the human journey, you know, as Joseph Campbell would allude to, is fascinating. And, you know, we start off and then we hit an obstacle and then we resolve the obstacle and then we end up with everything kind of resolved. And, you know, we come back to that storyline. And when filmmakers veer off of that, it sometimes can be interesting. At other times, it can just be overwhelming. And I felt a little bit of that with Sinners, frankly, and One Battle After the Other. Because by the time you figure that one out, you know, it's, I don't know, you're just lost. Enjoying the performances, however, the acting by Leonardo DiCaprio and Sean Penn, fantastic. But if I go back to Begonia, I went into that not knowing anything. And I have to tell you, I stayed with it. Was it my favorite film? No. But was it interesting? Yeah. And it had a little political, you know, thing going on there that kind of, with a surprise at the end. So
no spoilers here.
No.
Well, I think ironically or paradoxically, one of the movies, the one about the lager in World War One era Northwest, that was offbeat by virtue of being about someone who was very ordinary, which seems like a paradox, and yet there it is. But I will definitely stand up for Frankenstein, which I think is the best movie I saw this year and is really not a monster movie. I think it's very much about the human condition, as unusual as the setup may be. Sister, what would be your, do you have a selection of favorites?
I do, but one of them's Kate Hudson is nominated for Best Actress, and I hope she gets it. And that's for Song Sung Blue. About the couple that were, you know, they sang cover songs for Neil Diamond and Patsy Cline. It was ordinary, like you said, John. It was about ordinary people based on a true story. And, you know, the Hugh Jackman character struggles. You know, he's an AA, he's a recovering alcoholic, and he doesn't fall off the wagon. He just stays with it day after day. And it's not preachy. It's just a lovely family story about these two people who can really sing. I mean, I really loved it. And then my other one, you know, I don't want to recommend this film because it's morally supreme or anything, but I have to say that I was really, really impressed with Blue Moon. It's not on the top 10 either. Ethan Hawke should get an Oscar for acting in this. But when you get the director, Richard Linklater, and Ethan Hawke together, what you get is too much talking. It comes out like a play, but it's about Lawrence Hart, who used to write musicals with Richard Rodgers. And then Rodgers dropped Hart because of his alcoholism and picked up with Hammerstein. So we had Rodgers and Hammerstein. But I have to tell you, the acting was superb, and how Ethan Hawke could memorize those long takes of just pouring out his soul. And at the beginning, it says a quote by somebody that Lawrence Hart was the saddest man he ever met. And I have to think that the vulgarity and the language in this film, which will be off-putting to many, so I'm not saying it's great in that sense, but What else would you expect from the saddest man in the world? And it indeed it is. And you wish that he had a dimension of his spirit, because he does, but he never really develops it to pull him out of this dump that he's in. But what if Linklater and Ethan Hawke can pull this one off? They deserve it.
We've talked about this in past years when we have our chat here every year before the Oscars. Why do so many of these movies have like no likable characters? You know, one battle after another. I didn't like anybody. You know, there was nobody who seemed to have any kind of redeeming things about them. All of those kinds of things. How do we know who to root for when they're all kind of slimy? Sister Rose, you want to start us?
Well, I would put that off. It came to my mind right when you were asking this, is postmodernism in film. And that's when the attachment to like the root of values or the root of humanity, when it gets farther and farther away from authentic humanity, that's when we get these bizarre storylines that you can't even follow, or you don't have likable, redeemable characters. But of course, we're always looking for redemption and redemptive characters. And we don't get it. We're left unsatisfied, I think.
I would agree completely. And I think one of the things you highlight about Song Sung Blue is that the characters are likable. Yes. But that's not on our top 10, not on our nominations list. Mm-hmm. I think Hollywood, the mindset may be that to celebrate a positive character is somehow sentimental. Too old fashioned. And so you have to take hold of the dark side. Although I think, again, in Train Dreams, the film about the logger, he did seem to be somebody with whom you could sympathize.
Right. And even in F1, you know, both drivers, you know, both of the drivers who were the main characters seemed like they had maybe some redeeming qualities.
Absolutely.
You know, they were very rough and brash and difficult, you know, to get along with. So there were some redeeming things. It's just, I just keep seeing it more and more where it's just hard to understand why there's so many bad people in these movies.
Do you know if we can go back to F1? Did you notice how many times in the film they mentioned Senna? Mm-hmm. He was the great F1, the last F1 driver who was killed while racing. Because of his, what he insisted on for the car didn't happen with the car he was in, but they made the changes, the safety changes after that. So after that, there were crashes, but nobody has died since Senna did. And there's a documentary about him. And that's when I kind of got hooked on F1 and Ford versus Ferrari and all these other F1 movies. But I think I found the F1 very likable. I found the characters, although not very deep.
No,
you know, but I still think they were on a journey, and I saw them move on their. They didn't just stay stuck.
I also think the protagonist in The Secret Agent was certainly meant to be sympathetic. I followed his story with interest. But you're right that the trend is very much in the opposite direction.
Mm-hmm. So what is it then? What are these nominations finding in films that they come up? What is the criteria for the films that end up being on the best film nomination list? Sister?
Your guess is as good as mine.
Okay. You're the experts.
For more.
Well, so, you know, they have a process for nomination process for the members of the Academy, right? So then there's a short list that comes out of films, and then especially in the best film category. So I suppose in all the categories, but I don't know that for sure. And then from the short list, they cull it down. But some people used to say that, you know, the members, especially the male members of the Academy, would just pass the film, the links off to their kids or their wives or their husbands and let them watch it. And then they would take that and they wouldn't even watch all the films. Maybe now they're watching them. I don't know the answer to that. And they're picking what they like. I don't know, but I think John said before that maybe they're voting according to the industry rather than the audience. Mm-hmm. And that's why we have the People's Choice Awards and other awards that would highlight maybe what's more popular. or a film that we would actually watch again. I would watch Song Sung Blue again. I would watch F1 again, just to say. Not sure I would watch a Hamnet was beautiful, though. Hamnet was the cinematography in Hamnet. And Jessie, the main actress, she was amazing. But especially if you like Shakespeare and if you like the period drama, I did enjoy that. I thought it was very good. She was likable. Jessie Buckley, that's her name, right?
Yeah. Yes, I agree about Hamnet. My reservations, though, were sort of the occult aspect as feminist statement, coming from a purely ecclesiastical point of view.
That
was a little off-putting. But certainly her performance was magnificent. There's no question about that.
Yeah. And the cinematography in Train Dreams was amazing. So there are something, and even the cinematography in F1, just the way they got you into the car, you know, so that was those kinds of things. Let's break this down. We're already quite a ways into this conversation, and we're going to have to edit this down for the 28-minute radio package. But let's try to get your take on each of these movies in 30 seconds or less. So I'll say one movie name. We'll have Sister Rose go first and then John, and I'll say a movie name and then go back and forth. So Begonia, Sister Rose.
Okay. That's it. it's a surprise ending, kind of. So go with it. It's not what you think, if you want to see.
I'd say Wild, and interesting because it's wild, creative, original.
I thought the acting was good.
Yes.
I made notes after seeing all these movies just in my phone, and I have Alien, gross. Okay, let's move on to F1. John?
I can't say I was overly impressed. I enjoyed it, but to me it was a fairly routine sports movie, but that's not the popular opinion, clearly.
I would echo that, but I still enjoyed it a lot.
Mm-hmm. Frankenstein, Sister Rose first, and then John's got a new take on this one.
I only just started it. I didn't get to see all of it.
Okay. All right.
So John will have
so
to be
John
our...
can have your 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, and the important thing about it, too, is it's in sort of in two halves. And the second half is what really makes the movie, I think, a very profound work. Again, my favorite movie of the year. I went into it with very low expectations. I think it's a from what I gather, I can't say that I've read the novel, but I would gather it sticks closer to the source material than some other versions. And I just think it's a shame if people are put off the film because they'll think, oh, it's a monster movie and I don't want to see that. That's not what it's really about. I don't know how you get past that, but I thought it was really very memorable and thoughtful.
Sets were amazing, I thought. They were just very impressive.
Okay, we touched a little bit on Hamnet, but let's go back for a quick on that. Sister.
Well, it takes us back to Shakespeare, the Shakespeare story of William Shakespeare and Agnes Hathaway. As they said, Agnes and Anne were the same back then. And it gives us kind of a source story for Hamlet. So I found it interesting and beautifully filmed. And I liked it.
Great. John?
Yeah, I'd agree. It has that sort of masterpiece theater feel to it. It's a high-quality, intelligent film. I would advise anyone who has young children not to watch this movie.
Oh, it's not for kids. No, no.
No, but I meant if your children, wait till your children are over 18 to see this movie because the storyline is pretty wrenching. At least I found it so.
Mm-hmm. So Marty Supreme, this is one we just saw. This is about set in the 1950s with a man who's a semi-professional table tennis player. Sister Rose.
Well, okay, I didn't see it, but I did see a couple of good documentaries. We can come back to those if you want.
Okay, all right, we'll do that.
Okay.
Well, Marty Supreme, the performance is incredible. Timothy Chalamet, he's really devoted a huge amount of energy to the movie. So that's certainly impressive. Also, again, not what you're usually you know, expecting to see. I mean, how many people would normally go to see a movie about ping pong? But it's I had some difficulty with the morality of it because some of the events are certainly not in keeping with the Ten Commandments. Let's put it that way.
From the very first 10 minutes.
Yes. Yeah. So aesthetically, very well done, but ethically or morally problematic.
I read that he was, Timothée Chalamet was so devoted to this role and to getting it right that he worked for 4 years practicing playing table tennis, including taking his own table to all the movie sets that he worked on during those 4 years. So he had a ping pong table with him when he was working on Dune. He had a ping pong table with him when he was working on A Complete Unknown, so they could be as accurate as possible about that. But yeah, I would agree with you that the moral implications of this film are not great. And then to see Kevin O'Leary of Shark Tank in his first acting role was just kind of very, it's like, okay, where did we get a slimy businessman? There he is.
I kept waiting for him to say, I'm out. Okay, One Battle After Another. So we talked a little bit about that. Two great giant actors, Leonardo DiCaprio and Sean Penn, directed by Paul Thomas Anderson. Kind of a crazy, frenetic action thriller. Again, the characters may be a little quirky, hard to like, but what was your take on it, John?
I think it was, again, the acting was terrific. I thought the politics were unbalanced because basically the script winks at left-wing militant, violent action and then kind of demonizes the people who are opposing it in a kind of Dr. Strangelove way. Mm-hmm. But if you let that go, it's an interesting ride. Let's put it that way.
I thought it was a mess, frankly. And I asked my nephew, who's 24, 25 years old, what he thought of it. And he said, oh, that was a funny movie. And I said, you're telling me that was a comedy? And he said, yes, me and my friends, we laughed at it. It made us laugh. And I said, so what about the Ku Klux Klan? And what about John Hamm and all this stuff going on? And he said, that was the humor. And I'm going, okay, right over my head. I guess depending on how old you are, which generation you are, you see it according to the lens that you're in. And that wasn't my focus. So what I did, I looked at Sean Penn and I looked at Leonardo DiCaprio, and I thought that, you know, these are master classes in acting, and I just kind of left it at that.
So next up is The Secret Agent, which is a film set in Brazil. And done in Portuguese with English subtitles. So it's the kind of movie you have to actually pay attention to because you've got to watch it. One of the things about this is that I wasn't ever sure what he was a secret agent for. What was it that he was protesting or resisting within that government structure from which he was fleeing? Sister Rose, what's your take on that one?
Well, I'm only 40 minutes into it. Okay. I started watching it this afternoon. I'm still in jet lag, having come back from the U.S. But I think it's going to be interesting. What I'm looking at, and comparing it to other films from Brazil that I've seen that have even made it to the Oscars or at least to film festivals, is that it's very rural. It's either urban or rural in Brazil when you get these. And they're not always that easy to follow in as far as a coherent storyline. Mm-hmm. But I read somewhere about this film that some of the tangents that the films take are more interesting than the main line. But I'm not sure about that until I completely finish it.
Yes, I'd agree that it's hard to know exactly what has gotten him in trouble other than the fact that he's got a powerful businessman who doesn't like him. Right. Why else is he on the run? They never really answer that. I appreciated the low-key tone, but at the same time, he came off as a bit of a cipher. You sympathize with him, particularly as a father, but you're not really sure who he is. And I think the movie in the end kind of leaves you hanging. I don't know if that was the effect for the two of you.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah, I, you know, they kind of did this flash forward thing to the present where they were looking at these old tapes, and we never did find out who those people were who were investigating it. So that was kind of
well, you know, at the beginning when the man pulls into the gas station and there's a dead man who's yeah. been dead for 2 or 3 days. It's during Carnival, you know, just before yeah. Ash Wednesday, and the cops come, but they're more interested in this man than they are in the poor man who's been killed. I think this is absurd. So I just, well, anyway.
Yeah.
Well, I think the screenplay was trying to capture sort of the monstrosities that arise under a dictatorship.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. One more dead body doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
Okay. Sentimental value. Now, that one was very complex. They had two sisters who reunite with their father, played by Stellan Skarsgård, who we've seen in a few other things. It kind of revolves around almost the emotional cost of art. Have you both seen that and some thoughts on that?
I have not seen it. So I have to pass to John again.
Okay, I did see it. It's very European and very Scandinavian, I thought. not a film that would be made in the United States, but I enjoyed it at some level. I think the morality was a little bit skewed, but I thought the dynamic between the sisters, the way that they, so the setup is this very, what would we call him, emotionally disconnected father, and the contrasting reactions to his shortcomings on the part of each sister. I thought that dynamic was quite interesting. And the symbolic use of the house as kind of the stand-in for, or the embodiment of all that was going on within the family. That was interesting as well. I'm not sure what I was supposed to take away from the ending again. Some of these films just don't wrap up in a way that you can say, oh, okay, now I know why I watched this movie.
They had 2.5 hours. You could have thought they would have gotten into it.
we were noticing all the IKEA furniture, IKEA style.
Exactly.
Which was lovely.
All right, we're coming close to the end. And next up is Sinners, which starts out as a movie about early days of the blues and turns into something else completely different. Sister Rose.
Well, you know, I had to do a little background reading on this because I really wanted to see what the intentions of Ryan Coogler were. And, you know, he spent so many years creating this film, and it was shot in IMAX of all things. And I think it shows in the production values. But it's supposed to be a metaphor, I think, for racial, for slavery, and then the Ku Klux Klan and human liberty and what real freedom is. And of course, the whole vampire thing. Well, I can just see people taking this apart in their doctoral dissertations on cinema in years to come. I think it deserves more than one viewing because I couldn't get everything out of it in that initial viewing that I had. So I think it probably says a lot of things but I guess at the end, it was hopeful, but the hope just squeaked through.
I think they pulled off the sudden transition fairly well. But in terms of using the horror genre to make a point about race relations, I think Get Out did it better a few years ago. I think that's a superior film and is sort of using the same tools to send the same message.
Yeah. And this is a really long film, too.
Yeah.
Another one.
And quite violent.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't see that whole thing coming either. I think I would have worn a turtleneck that night. Okay, last but not least, Train Dreams, which is a lovely film, sad, poetic, about a man in the Pacific Northwest who has a plot of land and a wife and a son, and he's off helping expand the country into the West, building the railway, and then tragedy happens. What are your thoughts on this one as a contender for best film, John?
Well, certainly the cinematography was wonderful. I appreciated the fact that they were dealing with the life of an ordinary person. But ultimately, I found the film very depressing because I was reminded of the verse, you know, thinking about death as though we were among those who have no hope. Mm-hmm. Because the message of the film ultimately, I think, was he had a moment of sort of human understanding of the ups and downs of life. But beyond that, don't look for anything more substantial or hopeful. So I came away impressed with the film, but not particularly in a good mood.
That's fair.
By the way, not that it matters, but it was a daughter, his wife and daughter.
Oh, sorry. Thank you. Okay.
Sure.
Could I just say a couple of things about All the Empty Rooms, the nominee for a short documentary with Steve Hartman from CBS, him visiting the rooms of children who had been killed in gun violence across the country, how he said he just couldn't find something good in all these tragedies anymore. He had to make this film, and he did it on his own. He didn't do it with the backing of CBS. And it's short, but it's very moving. And the Alabama Solution, very powerful about the reality of the prison system in Alabama. And I don't think it's changed all that much yet. And yes, it's depressing, but it's also very motivating about how our prison system in the United States today is actually a new form of slavery. And I, you know, on how the whole criminal and the whole prosecution system works in this country, I think it's also calling us to action and to be very mindful about what we're doing to the human person. And then Sirot is an international film that I saw. It's about a Spanish-Moroccan production about a father and his son going to look for his daughter in Morocco. It's a very interesting, fascinating film, but it has that European quality to it. It has a definite ending, but it's about going from heaven all the way to hell. But it's very, it's well done. It's very masterfully done.
Interesting. Thank you for those.
Maybe of these nominees for Best Picture or not, what was your favorite movie of the year? John, you go first.
I would definitely go with Frankenstein. I think that was terrific. I definitely would make, if I were voting, Frankenstein would be the Best Picture of the year.
Okay. Sister Rose.
Of the films that I saw, it would be between Sinners and One Battle After Another, even though I didn't sound so positive on my commentary. Perhaps Sinners is the more, as John says, the aesthetics of the film are stronger. It's complex. It's different. And it has something to say.
I think I would go with Train Dreams or F1, which are two very different movies. But those were two of my favorites on the list.
I don't think F1's going to win, but I wouldn't mind if it did.
Okay.
Yeah, I think for me, I would have said F1 or Hamnet, but then we saw Sentimental Value. So can I have three favorites?
Sure. All right. Well, this has been a great conversation, as always. We love talking about movies with you and about Hollywood.
This is Ann Augerton of the Arlington Catholic Herald. Thanks for joining us for our annual pre-Oscars look at the films of 2025 with Daughter of St. Paul, Sister Rose Picotti, and OSV News media reviewer John Mulderig, and my co-host, Chris Cunty of Catholic Review Media. See you all at the movies. Thanks for listening.